What we are trying to do is each day we're looking at two planets and trying to get the flavor real. It's almost not astrology. We're just trying to get the flavor of certain planets and what they do. And we're doing this by glancing at horoscopes of famous people living and dead, so famous that most people sitting in the room here don't know who they are. In my typical style. All right. No, they're from other centuries, and most people don't. We're looking at planetary opposites. And planetary opposites usually produce a line of consciousness of some kind or another. The sun and moon present the line of light. And Mars and Venus is the line of desire. And yesterday we looked at the line of judgment, looking at Jupiter and Saturn. Today we're going to look at the line of spirituality by looking at the planetary opposites, Uranus and Neptune. The planets that we have looked at so far are called fundamentals. They deal with more or less concrete things in life, very definite things. Jupiter is abstract, but its abstraction is in principles. And the principles are about concrete things. When we have Uranus and Neptune, we have planets that are called transcendentals. And they deal with spiritual transcendentals. We're dealing with universals. So for the most part, they are beyond the ken of consciousness that we have here in this world. And they present all kinds of problems. All of the transcendentals, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto, are not really predictable. They come out with these things that you would never guess. So, what the Uranus and Neptune represent, they represent the life spirit and the human spirit. And those are things that do not have a focused presence here. Well, they do have a focused presence, but their presence here is very problematic from an astrological point of view. It's a problem that is very controversial, especially since a lot of the controversy is promoted by non-mystical astrologers who don't know the story of the spiritual worlds. Things from the transcendental realms, universal things, infinite things, eternal things, are focused here in this world. And they're focused through the lens of mind. That is concrete mind. Now the process of focus is analogous to the process of focusing through a lens. Just like a motion picture projector focuses images on a film through a lens, and they are inverted. So the film, as it's passing through the lens for the projector, is actually upside down. And in the process of going through the lens, it gets inverted. And so that's what happens. Now, for this reason, there are two different natures to Uranus and Neptune. One of those natures being the transcendental nature, and the other being the inverted material nature. And so it is possible to see these two planets in very different ways. Now, so, you know, they're still physical planets here, even though they have a presence here in this world, even though what they represent is inverted through the lens of mind. Now, in the concrete, the nature of Uranus is masculine. Its manifestation is technical, especially in matters like electricity and electronics and inventiveness and even in mechanics. those are seen as a somewhat masculine kind of activity because there is an assertion to direct and control the world. This has led the materialistic astrologers to say that Uranus is the octave of Mercury, even though they don't know what octavation in planets means or in spiritual things. The mysteries astrologers, such as Max Heindel, have indicated that Uranus represents the spiritual feminine, and it's associated with life spirit. Mysteries astrologers think that the spiritual feminine, or people who respond to the spiritual feminine, like authority, and they like living by faith, and they like living by love, especially altruistic love. If this is true, it is, as the mysteries astrologers claim, that Uranus is the octave of Venus, which rules love and affection. And they point to the altruistic love of Uranus being the octave quality, just as the materialistic astrologers point to the technicality as being the octave quality. The question is, who is right? Well, in some ways, both have a rightness because they're pointing at things that they can see observationally. But then the whole process of octavation becomes somewhat questionable because something can't be the octave of two different fundamentals. You can't have a middle C and a middle B being octaved in a high C. So it has to be one or the other. Now, if you apply observation and intuition together very carefully, there's a simple matter that you can determine for yourself. It's really simple. I've spent my entire career working with design engineers and electronics technicians, very Uranian fields. And if you work with them, when they're debugging, or when they're repairing electronic circuits, or if they're designing and their design doesn't do quite what they want it to do, they start debugging it. And when they debug, they don't do it intellectually. There's some kind of rough intellect in there, but it isn't really intellectually the way they do it. They do it intuitively. And when they find out what is wrong, then they reason back and say, oh yeah, this must be like this and this and this. But the reason is not the leading force, the reason is the trailing force, which is just exactly like you would expect. Plato was very Uranian. He had the sun in Aquarius. And Plato is the champion of back reasoning, meaning to say that he would get intuitions about the nature of things and then reason would come afterwards. In fact, Plato even taught that you're supposed to have intuitions of the truth, and you wrap your thoughts around the intuitions of the truth, but the intuitions have to come first. I even spent some time interviewing people who worked with Iranian people who worked with mechanics. I did this, I had to do it carefully because they were people who were not knowing that they were being interviewed for astrology, or they never would have agreed with to being interviewed. And what it turned out was that the mechanics also did all of their mechanical repair work using intuition. They didn't follow a process saying this must be like this and this must be like this, like this. They also did back reasoning. So that part appears to be true as far as the mysteries astrologers like Max Heindel and Alan Leo claim. But there's still the problem that the mysteries hypothesis might not hold true for Neptune. But if they did, it would certainly be an almost incontrovertible certainty that their idea about it was correct. Now, mysteries is astrologers have always said that Neptune is a spiritually masculine planet. It has to do with cosmological or rationale for anything, even as a psychological rationale for motivation. Now, Neptune does deal with more neutral things like astrology, but basically its true character comes out in a masculine sense when it deals with controlling activities like alchemy and things like that, where you try to transform things. Everybody agrees it's the planet of magic. Materialists don't want to believe that magic is a masculine controlling type of activity. It is the planet of composition. Uranian people can write music, but when they do so, it comes up in them spontaneously. And it isn't a matter of knowing always what the music means. And that knowing what something means is what is characteristic of Neptune. Neptune not only knows that something is true, it knows why it is true, and it has some way that it can demonstrate the truth of its knowing. Whereas Uranus just knows that something is true and just goes with that, which is exactly like life spirit is. Life spirit is beyond principles. It's pure truth. When you have an Uranian intuition, you just know that something is true from your heart, and you go ahead and you do it, and you follow it, and it always comes out to be right. All right, so we have gotten that. Again, the materialistic astrologers are misled by the lower octave manifestations. In the phenomenal expressions, Neptune is very receptive, very passive, and in that regard, it is called feminine. It is the passivity of mediumship, and it rules passive fakery, like counterfeiting and uncontrolled receptivity, and cosmetics are all things of the lower Neptune, which is something like counterfeiting. It's deception in one way or another. So it's obvious that why in this passive way it would be seen as the octave of Venus. But again, there is something that holds true to both octaves, the higher octave and the lower octave. Whether it is masterful magical command, or whether it is Neptunian fakery, or some kind of psychological phobia, or something of that nature, Neptune always has a rationale. The lower Neptune, it's an excuse, or it is what we call rationalization. With the higher Neptune, it is some supra-rational kind of quality. And from this observation, it's pretty clear to see that the mysteries teachings, like those of Max Heindel's about who is the octave and who isn't, turns out to be very clear. None of this is going to be really important for what we're going to look at today. We're sort of going to blur the distinction between octaves and just look at getting the feel of what each octave does in positive and in negative. And some of our expressions will be mostly phenomenal. It's very hard to find purely transcendental people, because if you find them, you have people who are extremely masterful or extremely developed spiritually. And again, we're taking very, very obvious charts, and we're taking lead pipe cinch kinds of things so that you can see it first in the clear, and then later on you can see how this works in less obvious things. We would like to talk about the higher problems of Uranus and Neptune and how they relate to each other in problems of the self versus the beyond self, which is a lovely thing. We're going to be talking about that in the last talk tomorrow evening. But it is not an easy thing to find horoscopes in on a very elementary level. Examine those horoscopes. All right, we may have to share again. These are the horoscopes we're going to be looking at for today. The first horoscope for today is an strongly Uranian individual. Unfortunately, he also has quite a bit of Neptune in his behavior, but we'll just bypass looking at all of that. There are five planets, including Uranus and the ascendant, in Aquarius, which is ruled by Uranus. So we have a strongly Uranian individual here. Now, Uranus, being supra-rational, tends toward being irrational. And it's very difficult to talk about irrational people, because it's like, if I can give you an example of what it's like to talk about irrational people. Try to make a sentence that means nothing. You can't do it. Your mind is cued to doing something rational. So when a person is functioning from Uranus in that way, it's kind of difficult to relate to him. Now, does everybody know who William Burroughs is? Okay, most of the people do, anyway. All right, William Burroughs was heir to the Burroughs Calculating Company, which was once the size of IBM. They had all of these different calculating machines. And in the early part of the 20th century, that was a very big thing. Now, he never took part in the company except to relieve it of much of the family, much of the whole family funds that he had. It is not even with much caution, but it is with great misgiving to say that this is sort of a twisted or distorted higher Uranus and lower Uranus person. Now, in cosmological astrology, Uranus and Aquarius relate to life spirit, which is the realm of pure truth, and it transcends principle, and it transcends reason, and even transcends individuation. Now, if you understand that, if you understand that what he is working with, but not really understanding himself, it's easy to see how he did some of the things he did. This is a person, since the realm of life spirit is beyond principle, it's beyond the law. It's like when Paul says in the Bible, the end of the law is love. Meaning to say that the love, the Christ love of life spirit that loves everything and everyone, is where he's drawing on, but he doesn't know what he's doing. And so he had it in his consciousness that he was meant to be free. And this meant breaking the law. So quite a bit of his early life, he broke the law. And he broke it intentionally just to prove that he was above the law. And a good amount of the family fortune went into legal defense. And because family was so powerful, he virtually did get away with it. So he tried to prove himself. And when you try to prove yourself, it means that you really don't prove yourself. Now, life spirit is the realm of Christ. It's the realm of Christ love, which is altruistic love. In this horoscope, Uranus and Venus, both of the octaves are joined together, indicating that personal love and universal love are fused and made as one. But again, if a person doesn't understand this correctly, it can be gotten in a weird way, which is what happened with him. He was married twice, but most of his life he was a practicing homosexual. And so this is a perfect example of that confused higher love. In fact, he even lived in a male brothel in North Africa for a few years for several reasons. Because he could practice homosexuality without the fetters of the law, and because he could smoke all the hashish and take heroin and all those things in abundance without being bothered by the law. Now, the ancient Greeks called life spirit the crystallium because it was a realm of pure, clear, dense crystal light. For this meant to him that everything was clear and open. Even though he did criminal things and he took drugs and he had homosexuality and all of those things, he had no secrets, none whatsoever, and he had no shame, absolutely no shame about anything that he ever did. He thought the only thing that he thought was a shame is that people could not understand because everything seemed so clear to him. Now, Uranus is ruled by, Aquarius is ruled by both Saturn and Uranus. And in this horoscope, these planets in Aquarius trine the moon and Saturn down in at the nadir of the horoscope. And having no grounds for anything and having no laws about anything, he could take all of his strange notions and he could write. Well, he didn't like the process of writing. He did very curious writing. His most famous novel is called Naked Lunch, which is a complete non sequitur. But it reads well because he understood how to use language. He is the one that is famous for the statement, he wanted everything to be all intuitive. Everybody should relate directly to each other by not mind reading, but direct spiritual apperception of each other. And so he believed that that's the way communication should take place, but he had to work with the mind. And he thought, this is the famous quote from him, language is a virus of the mind, that the mind is born with language inside of it. He would try to do anything that was new because that's the nature of Uranus. He wants everything new. And it was especially appealing to him if it was outside of the law. Now, because of his love of drugs, his inhibitions were indeed drawn down by the drugs, and he would do anything. In one case, in a party in Mexico, under the influence of all kinds of different drugs, he wanted to prove his marksmanship. And he put a glass of whiskey on his wife's head and proceeded to shoot her in the head. And he never was prosecuted for it. Never. So he was in some ways above the law. And it wasn't even because of money. I think it was because of the way things are done in Mexico. So this is an example of an Iranian person who is extremely perverted. Since we're supposed to spend less than 4 minutes on a horoscope, we're probably overstayed again. The next horoscope is the horoscope of Angela Davis, which is somebody I assume that everybody else knows. Everybody knows Angela Davis. I'm trying to see, these lectures are an exercise in getting everybody to study a lot of biography and current events and things like that because, in sports they say you can't know the score, you can't know the game without a program. And what we're saying is you can't know the program without knowing the figures that are in the program. And so it's a big campaign to get people to study different things. This is a person that I like very much, though I probably shouldn't. This is the horoscope of Angela Davis, who was a black rights, civil rights, prison reformer, anything that produced more inequality for more equality for people, she was for. The sun and the moon are both in Aquarius. And Uranus is very strong in this chart. It's conjoined to Mars, and it's in the first house, and it trines the sun. So we have a really strong Iranian type here. Her altruism, for her, translated into communism. She was an exceedingly intelligent person and took up communism, I guess, almost as a child. She graduated as a straight-A student, a cum laude student, and she was appointed to the faculty of UCLA. But because she was a communist, the right wing in California tried to block her appointment. And the governor of the state at that time was Ronald Reagan, and he couldn't handle that at all, so he tried to fire her. He was not successful, but she took herself out of the position anyway. She became an infamous celebrity overnight in the case of the Soledad brothers. Jonathan Jackson, she worked with him because his brother was in Soledad prison in California, and I think it was because he was a black rights person. And so Jonathan Jackson entered the court when his brother and two other Soledad prisoners were being tried. And basically what he did is he tried to take hostages. He had weapons. And so a gunfight ensued in the Marin County Courthouse, and the judge and three of the judge's assistants were killed. After the firefight was over, the arms were traced to ownership by Angela Davis. And she fled and hid as long as she could, but they eventually tried her. And it was an interesting trial because the prosecution tried to say that she was in love with the Jackson brother and it was a crime of passion, that it was a premeditated murder. She claimed that it was a political crime and that really that she was speaking for liberty and justice, and she was not Jackson's lover, but she was working together with him in prison reform activities. And it's really interesting. She has, if you look at seventh house, which is trials and court cases, you find that you find Scorpio there. And Mars, one of the co-rulers, is in a pretty strong trine with sextile with Neptune and sextile to Pluto, who is the other ruler. So this means likely positive outcomes. And she was tried by an all-white jury, and there was a unanimous version acquitting her of being accessory to murder. Ronald Reagan was outraged, and Ronald Reagan said, if I have anything to say about it, she will never be hired by anyone in the state of California again, and she certainly will never teach in the California system. Right now, she teaches at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And of all things, she holds the president's chair for black justice. She really is a rabble-rouser for civil rights, and for freedom for everyone. If you get a chance, she comes through town about once every two or three years. And she's a brilliant speaker. And she makes some things about liberty, about freedom, and about justice for all people. She makes it extremely clear. She's radical, politically radical, But she's worth seeing. But you can see that she has the Uranus Mars together, which is the firebomb floor. But because it's in that grand trine with Neptune and the Sun, and because there is a sextile to Pluto there, it's now mostly intellectual firebombs that she throws. Now let's look at the next horoscope. Yes. It gives you what? Yes, the presence of Pluto especially does that. Pluto is the planet that bestows power, but she has trouble struggling with it. The Sun-Pluto afflictions are always people who have to wrestle with power, and that means to fight City Hall. And the opposition in this horoscope of the Sun-Pluto is somebody who fought City Hall quite a bit, probably still will in this life. All right, does everybody know who Paul Hindemith is? I'll have to offer the week before summer school, I'll have to offer remedial culture courses. No, you would never believe how many hours, what takes place in this 1 hour, you would never believe how many hours of preparation there are. First, you have to look through thousands and thousands of horoscopes for those that perfectly demonstrate what you're trying to say. Then you have to do all kinds of biography work. And biography work on the net is not very good. Every now and then you can run into a decent biography, but most of them are really small and they don't offer much insight. You can't really, you know, like this would mean that 8 horoscopes a day, that means 40 books I'd have to read if you read book biographies. All right. This is not a perfectly Iranian horoscope, but it does show something about Uranus that I want to bring out. The Sun and Moon both are conjoined to Uranus in this horoscope, so it's somewhat Uranus. Now, Uranus is in Scorpio, a water sign, and it's exalted there. And if you want to see a principle in nature that is like the exaltation of Uranus, you take the concept of ionization. If you go into the ionosphere, most atoms do not have any electrons clinging to them. They're in a free electron state, at least in the outer shell. They're in a free electron state. That's what's called the ionosphere. So it's alive. It's electrically alive and vital. But the same thing occurs if you take inorganic reagents and put them in water. The ions in the outer shell are free. They're not associated with any particular nucleus and main structure of an atom. And that ionization, this is why salt water is so highly conductive of electricity. So Uranus usually doesn't do well in water signs. It likes all the fixed signs, or it detests all of the fixed signs, one or the other. It's usually not at home, but it is in Scorpio. The way it worked in this chart is he was at the beginning of what is called modern music, which means music that to many people doesn't sound like music. But modern music. Yeah, exactly. Exactly what that music is like. But the modern music came after the tailing end of Romanticism. And the Romantic movement began with the first cusping effect, the aura effect of the Aquarian Age. So in the middle of the 19th century, Romanticism became very strong, as did attempts at Iranian things, like Das Kapital was written under the conjunction of Uranus and Pluto, And even though Pluto ruled the next half century, it was the first influence, you know, the seed principle was being germinated at that time. So Venus is the octave of Uranus, and so what we have with Paul Hindemith, the quality of Uranus in Scorpio is an emotional quality, but it's super emotional. That is, it is romantic. So this is romantic music, and obviously with having all those planets in Scorpio, this is intense, very, very intense romantic music. And when we use the word romantic, we don't mean like bubblegum music where boy loves girl and has all kinds of cheesy romanticism about it. We're talking about the high-blown romanticism of art and mythology and things like that. So there are two major three-planet conjunctions in Scorpio, and that indicates the tendency, the intensity. Now, with Hindemith, this intensity became more and more focused on the influence of Uranus, and it became modern music. He wrote a book of theory while he was a visiting professor at Harvard, and it's very mystical, and it's written in an irrational way that most modern musicologists and theorists shake their head and they can't believe, you know, that he would say something like that, because it doesn't make sense to them. The logic doesn't follow for them. This is somebody that's super irrational, obviously. Hindemith even wrote electronic music for the milieu of classical music. His music became more intense, it became more unearthly, and it became more a music of emotions divorced from melody, and even it became a music of pure sounds. His ideas about harmonics, very weird. All right, now let's look at the one purely mystical chart that we have here. This is the horoscope of Saint Teresa of Avila. And you probably not find a more purely Uranian type of person if you looked at hundreds of thousands of horoscopes. This is one of the most beautiful mystical horoscopes I've ever seen. The moon and Neptune are in Aquarius, but it is the sun conjoined Uranus in the first house that indicates their Uranian nature. She was a leader. Again, the sun is in the first house, and we've been saying that when the sun is in the first house, it's a self-made person. And in this case, she was self-made, which in translation in this case means God-made person. She made her own path, and she did it exclusively by prayer. She was dedicated. At a very early age, she tried to lie about her age, and she tried to run away from home and join a monastery. And after two or three attempts, they quit bringing her back home because that's all she wanted to do in life. She has Mars conjoins Jupiter and trine Uranus. So you can understand that there is a lot of charisma. There is a lot of positive spiritual energy. She has spiritual courage. As an Aries, she was the founder of quite a few nunneries, even though everybody was against her. She liked new things, like Uranus likes new things, and for her, it worked the same way as it did when we looked at Robert Anderson's chart on Tuesday. She did it by renewing life as a nun. Every day was new to her, and she was aghast at the state of the monasteries or the nunneries in Spain, and so she set out to purify them, renew them. But she ran into trouble with authority. Iranian people always run into people with authority, which was a problem for her. because being a mystic, she had to follow authority. And she believed in authority, but she ran amok of authority. So what she did, rather than go against authority, she just started new nunneries. And she had her own kind of oddness about her. You know, Iranians do really unique things and odd things. She started a mystical thing. It was called the Unkelst, which means you could tell who were her followers because they were barefoot. You've heard of barefoot nuns? She is the founder of the barefoot nuns. It's a sort of the Iranian back to nature kind of thing, only in this case it was supposed to mean humility. She liked and she wanted things to be simple. She wanted them to be pure. She was always the center of controversy because she had the strong Neptunian nature. Neptunian's nature is more the controlled nature of a spiritual mason, but her obedience, I'm just astounded by it. She had to deal with very irrational, traditional people, but she remained, even though she had the power to do things differently. She was inwardly obedient. She spent many hours a day in prayer, no matter what the circumstance. She had one period where she was, when she was a child mystic, they had to take her out of the nunnery because she was paralyzed, I believe, for 4 years. And in that paralysis, all she did was pray. And when she came out a really, really remarkable kind of individual. So receptivity is the all. What's most interesting in this horoscope is there's only one Earth planet, and only one water planet. But she was so much a mystic, and the mystics are always symbolized by water, whereas the occultists are symbolized by fire. She wrote, all of her writings were on the four stages of prayer, because over the years, she found herself go into four distinct stages of inner development, but all of them were symbolized by how water works. Some of them were like intuitions hitting like drops of rain and things like that. It was really quite something. All right, we're way out of time now. Now we come to Neptune. All right, everybody, nobody, if I walk out, if everybody doesn't know Edgar Allan Poe. This is the horoscope of a genius, the poet and the writer Edgar Allan Poe. This is the horoscope of a Neptunian type, but it could just as well be a Saturnian type. And for that reason, because there's as much Saturn as there is Neptune, this is a dark genius, a depressive genius. And it deals with all kinds of things that lurk in the sinful shadow of the human soul. It's difficult to tell whether this horoscope is the higher or the lower octave of Neptune. On one hand, he was extremely creative and knew the magical power of words, not just the meaning of the words, but the sound of them, like the tint. Nebulation of the bells, bells, bells. He knew those kinds of things and he could move people. But on the other hand, he was extremely passive and he was addicted to alcohol and he was addicted to drugs and he was addicted to gambling. So he has both the higher and the lower side of Neptune. Saturn conjoins Neptune, which shows a really dark side of things. But that doesn't necessarily mean that he was overwhelmed by it, because he used the Neptune in one way that was quite positive. He tried to understand the meaning of things. And as a consequence, he could delve into the motives in the minds of criminals. He knew how the criminal mind works. This is the man that is the originator, the first person to write detective novels. So this is quite astounding. His aesthetic is shown in the Neptune square to Venus and the Moon. It shows a stupendous amount of imagination, but the imagination isn't always true to external reality. Either the Moon square Neptune or Venus square Neptune is an indication of fantasy, but having both of them tightly conjoined and square to Neptune shows that this is a person that lived in fantasy. He had a hard time coming to reality at all. And probably his writing was the working out of fears. Because with the Saturn there, the flip side of all fantasy is phobia. And unlike Freud and Jung, I do believe that fantasies can be overcome. But you overcome them by overcoming the phobia, the thing that you are afraid of. And that is the way it worked in him. He included a lot of science in everything he did, and he always had some kind of rationality to his character. Scorpio's rising. Is in Pisces trying to Uranus. So what he did is he tried to delineate and understand obsession. Perfect horoscope for doing that kind of thing. And there's the almost exact trines of Uranus to Venus and the Moon, which shows enormous creativity. It's not surprising that he is a founder. This is almost an Iranian horoscope as well. It's just the normal things in life that he didn't do well with. Well, we have one here that we can talk very little about. I'm sure less than half the people know who Francois Sagan is. Sagan? How many know? No, two? Oh, hey. This is a horoscope of a quasi-sensational, quasi-delusional literary figure. Only she's... She's not as brilliant as Poe. She became very universally famous at an early age. At 18, she lost a lover that she had. And she went into a big tailspin when she lost her lover. And she went wild with drugs and other wild young people and lived a dissipated lifestyle. And with fast cars and people dying in accidents and things like that. And she put it all into a book. And it was autobiographical. And 18 years old, she was not only famous in France, she was famous all over the world. It was an insightful look. It had the Neptunian quality of insight. This is somebody who has Neptune conjoined the ascendant. And it's sextile to Jupiter, and Jupiter's in the third house, so she can expatiate it in a positive way and make even very ugly things look very good. And there's a kind of universal understanding. You can see the problem in that Uranus is opposite to Saturn, and Saturn is opposite the ascendant. And that means a dissatisfaction with the world. And in that dissatisfaction with the world, she goes into the drugs and all of those kinds of things. Both planets sextile and trine Uranus, so there's a lot of insight in there. And when there are Uranus-Neptune aspects, a person becomes sort of a representative of the times. And that's what she... Yes?
They're not opposite Uranus, they're opposite Neptune.
No, I'm talking about Uranus is trine to Neptune. And sextile to Saturn. I whipped that by you pretty fast, I think. All right. So she had a lot of insight into society.
And she has, you know, gives a very big positive picture of a whole generation. And she wrote a number of books after, what's the name of her famous book, Farewell? Oh, Bonjour Triste, which means good farewell to sadness, is what it means in translation. I was thinking the translation and not the thing itself. She wrote about 40 novels, and she even wrote a ballet. She was really prolific, but most of her novels were all the same story as her first novel, and gradually they seemed to be watered down, and the generation was moving on into maturity, and toward the end of her life, she slipped out of life without even being known. The next horoscope is, and I happen to like people that nobody else likes, or few people like. Sharaji and I both like this next horoscope owner a lot. I wouldn't have fit in because I've gotten too much of the Virgo Puritanism in me, but there's part of me that would have loved to have been a Rajneeshi. I have several friends that were Rajneeshi, and I love them because of it. You were a Rajneeshi?
No, not me, but I know people who were there.
I had a big crush for a long time. But I remember I used to hang around with Susan Bennett. There was a young woman, I love petite little women, and she was about 5'1". And she was a Rajneeshi, and I had a big crush on her. And I'd tell Susan Bennett things like, I don't want everything in my... The woman's name was Mo, which was short for Marine. I said, I don't want everything in life. I just want a little Mo. All right. I wanted to do somebody that was a spiritual master, that was in control of the forces of nature, but there were too many problems with that. So let's take... Yeah, it's too hard to talk about something. You're talking about something that's over your own head. And when somebody lesser talks about somebody greater, which is what a follower is, it turns out to be not so good. This is the horoscope of a very, very much misunderstood man. Neptunian people are often misunderstood because they're so different and they're so otherworldly, and they say things in very weird, unusual ways. In this case, Neptune and five other planets are in mystery houses, which produces even greater difficulty. It means that the true nature of all those things dealing with Neptune is hidden. It's not above the surface. Most people are not going to see that. What is important in this person's life is the inner life, not the life that you see outside. The intellect in this person is humongous. This is somebody that is intimately familiar with Eastern philosophy, Western philosophy, Western psychology, anything you can think of. He could stand up here and be asked to be given a lecture on any subject, and he could lecture for 2 or 3 hours, and it would be great, the lecture that he offered. That is the quality that you get when Neptune is trine Mercury. It doesn't need a whole lot of matter to get a large amount of understanding from it. So this person was a spiritual genius, and he could lecture on just about anything. Jupiter is again in the third house, and it's trine to the sun, which shows that he was an orator, a very good orator, and a very good writer. Has a whole stack of books that he wrote. And it's in a fiery sign, and it shows an outgoing kind of character. He felt good about himself, and he wanted his followers to feel good about themselves. But his followers did not have that, all of that strict discipline that comes from the planets in the earthy sign being trined with Neptune. And unfortunately, they couldn't live with the discipline that he did. In this case, Uranus square Neptune does not indicate male homosexuality. It means free love. And in his positivity, he knew he wasn't going to get carried away in free love, but he didn't but he didn't realize that his followers did. This was the beginning of the time of AIDS. And so there were great problems because they not only believed in free love, but they believed in the Freudian idea that a lot of psychological problems are a result of repressed sexuality. And so what he did is they had, like when he was in Pune, they had this room which was like a padded wrestling ring. And people were allowed, couples, males and females, I don't know if there was any homosexual activity, were allowed to go in there and anything goes kind of a thing. I don't know if anyone ever got freed from repressed sexuality. Just loosening up the repression is one thing, but you have to remember that anytime you indulge yourself in a desire, you're likely to indulge yourself again. And so his followers came to be rather unrestrained libidinists. I see them as a generation of hippies who were taking one last fling and going to really celebrate with Rajneesh and hope they would come out the other end as spiritual. Or on a square Venus. Maybe I've misspoken. Sorry if I did. I cannot verify the rumor about the latter part of his life. In the latter part of his life, he became quite a dark figure. After the fiasco in Oregon, the rumor is that the same thing was done to him as was done to Bob Dylan, and that is that he was poisoned or conditioned in some way by the CIA. Because Bob Dylan, for a while there, Bob Dylan was almost killed on a motorcycle, and it was by intention, and it was a warning shot for Bob Dylan. And Rajneesh's character changed very greatly. I tend to think with the Saturn opposite Pluto, it's a possibility, a reasonable possibility that something like that took place. I think he died in Australia. He had a new group of followers there, but it wasn't anything like his true nature. Well, we better get on. And since we've talked about a whole bunch of people I like, we have to talk about one that I don't like. Does everybody know who Marianne Williamson is? This is exceedingly hard for me. This happens to be one of the most popular spiritual figures in the world at this time. And I can't talk in glowingly positive terms about Marianne Williams. This is someone who has the horoscope of with it has many mediumistic tendencies in it. Just having all the planets in Cancer is enough to be mediumistic. And then to have them square to Neptune and to Saturn indicates even more tendencies to mediumship. There are the protective sextiles to Jupiter in the 11th house, and Jupiter is not only a friend in such a case, being in a fixed sign, it is a very staunch friend. She has many friends that will stand behind her. So the Sun and Uranus Venus square Neptune indicate a confused self-image, a self-image that's likely to illusion. Remember, Neptune is the planet of illusion. Now, this person teaches a philosophy that is not completely healthy. It's a philosophy that by mediumship was supposed to have given to the founder of this philosopher by none other than Jesus, as though Jesus had time and inclination to be a mediumistic guide. And this philosophy teaches that the physical world is an illusion. So all of the reality, the sun in the first house, is the external world. And so all of the external reality that this person sees around her, she considers to be an illusion. And you can get their literature. You can get it at a little restaurant up in Wisconsin Dells called the Cheese House Restaurant. It's run by this organization, and they give you, the only reality is the mind, and the literature is presented unthoughtfully, having read through a bunch of it. Funny thing about this is that people are used for the good irrespective of the difficulties they have. Even though she has a false sheen about her that comes from Neptune that is illusory, the positivity that comes from Jupiter is that she's one of these people of undying optimism, and that undying optimism helps people who believe. Sometimes things don't have to be perfectly true, and sometimes a philosophy doesn't have to be exactly representative of nature in order to be true. And but nonetheless, people are uplifted. And so it's kind of hard for me to stand up here and feel like some kind of ghoul or something like that. So the future is positive, but it's only positive if we take the problems that we have right now and work through them, or do the best we can with them, and move forward in that way. It's not a la-di-da. Some of the things even go beyond Pollyanna. This is everything that's said here. It should be tried, including the philosophy of Marianne Williams should be tried. What is the statement from? Is it from the Epistle of St. John's, try the spirits and find them wanting? For right now, let's close with doing the Rosicrucian student's prayer. O God, increase our love for thee, so that we may serve thee better from day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our redeemer. We got 20 minutes. It's almost hot enough to turn the cooler on again, huh? Okay, nobody wants the cooler on? No. Well, you'll have to arm wrestle with Barbara. Oh, yeah. Yes. That's the philosophy I was talking about. If you read the literature of that, it is highly mediumistic. Yes, everything is thought. This is not real.